Hello and welcome back. This is the sixth class in the Laws of Shabbat, the crash course in the 39 prohibited categories of created labor. Tonight we are going to be beginning with Hagozes et Hatzemer, shearing wool. This particular category, and as we mentioned many other times before, that the categories are a reference to general prohibitions that all come under one specific category. Everything going back to what was done in the creation of the Mishkan, and it's the proximity of the laws of Shabbat to the laws of the creation of the Mishkan that is meant to tell us that we learn about the laws of Shabbat from the creation of the Mishkan itself. Now, up until now, meaning the first five classes, what we did is we covered all of the malachot that were in the first order. If you call back to class 1, all of the 39 malachot are divided into four orders, meaning four different groups of malachot that are done. The first order, which we've completed, is the order of baking bread. And as we said before, there are two different ways of understanding that, either the order of planting to the creation of the bread, which it was used for the lechem haponim, for the showbread that was used in the Beit HaMikdash, or the, in this case, the Mishkan and the Tabernacle. Or it has to do with the fact that the chemicals that were necessary in order to produce the dyes and various other substances, well, they were from various different plants. So therefore, it was the process of growing and processing those plants that we were talking to. Now, so tonight we will be beginning now with the second order, which is the order of garments. It's all of the various laws that are connected to the creation of badim, creation of materials, in order so that those materials in the times of the creation of the Mishkan would be used for example, as the curtains and things like that. So here we begin now with the first, which was shearing. Starting out with, again, the raw materials that we need to work with when they are plant materials. We've already had that covered in the previous order, so now we're talking about live animals. Specifically, for example, sheep. So sheep, you need to go ahead and remove the wool off of the body of the sheep in order to be able to do any kind of processing at all. So the first process of removing the wool is called shearing, gozes. So what does this category entail? Well, it is the removing or cutting a human or animal's hair, feathers, or nails in the ordinary fashion. That is what makes it a Torah prohibition. So, when it comes to the fact that we're talking about a Torah prohibition, yes, an ordinary fashion of removing the hair, feathers, or nails is what makes it a Torah prohibition. Nevertheless, from the rabbinical perspective, which we usually don't break down too much in this crash course, any form of removing of hair, feathers, or nails is going to be a problem off of, again, a human or animal. So now, as we tend to do here, we like to begin with the do's. So let's begin with some do's. Well, first of all, you can pull out a feather from a cooked piece of chicken. Well, unfortunately, as the case may be, in order to be able to remove the feathers from a chicken, there are two basic processes that are used. And I'm talking about the chicken that we buy and eat. So again, this raw chicken, very often when it is kosher, we find that sometimes there are little pieces of feathers that are still left inside of the chicken skins and stuff like that, and part of the process, you have to remove it. So if you happen to cook up a piece of those chicken, one of those chickens, and you need to remove the feathers, again, after it's been cooked, so now it's no longer considered to be a chicken, but food, which is happens to be from a chicken. So in this state of food, you are allowed to remove the feathers from the chicken. Now, the reason why these feathers may end up here is like this. There's two processes in the going ahead and processing of chicken feathers called flicking, meaning the removing of them. So one way of removing the chicken feathers is by using hot liquids and waxes and things like that, which is the method that is most commonly used in non-Jewish butcher processing plants and so forth, because it's the most effective. It helps to remove everything right down to the root, all of the various feathers. But when it comes to when it comes to kosher, that doesn't work. And the reason is that if you go ahead and apply hot liquids to a chicken before you've koshered it, meaning before you've gone through the salting process, you actually cause the blood to congeal then into the skin, into the surrounding parts of the chicken, and what this results in is something which can no longer be cooked, meaning from a kosher perspective. So therefore that would ruin the chicken for us. So a mechanical means needs to be used. So they have flicking machines that take the chicken and spin it at very fast speeds, and a little, you know, piece will come out and will literally hit the pieces of the various feathers as they spin around, and that will cause them to pull out from the skin. But unfortunately, sometimes it causes them to break, and sometimes it causes them to not get fully out of the skin, and so forth and so on. So that is why, unfortunately, sometimes kosher chickens tend to have a little bit more in the feather department. Nevertheless, once you've cooked the chicken, which is the point we're getting to, you can go ahead and remove these feathers. If you're sitting down to a piece of chicken and there's some feathers and you want to eat that greasy, grimy, not very good for your skin, although perhaps very good tasting, you can do so. The other things that you could do is brush your hair gently, but this is only with a soft brush that has been set aside for Shabbat use. You can't use your regular, you know, hard bristle brushes and things like that. And again, because you're not allowed to pull out from your own head, meaning pull out from your skull or scalp, the hairs that are on your head. A person should also be cognizant that running his fingers through his beard or things like that is a bit problematic, and a person should again try and avoid that, especially if he has a habit of going ahead and pulling out from his face, you know, various beard hairs as he's sitting and studying and things like that. So again, a person should be cognizant of that. And the same thing goes for the various little habits that we might have, like chewing on our fingernails. That's certainly an issue. It's certainly not allowed. Or, for example, picking off little pieces of skin that happen to be hanging all around or things along those lines. Those are all issues. As a side issue, by the way, if you happen to have a hangnail, that means to say that the nail began to break and cut, and it's almost more than half off, and we're concerned now, again, it's causing you some pain and some trouble and things like that. In a case like that, a person could use his fingers then to finish removing them in order to stop the fingernail from continuing to cause him stress and so forth on Shabbat. One of the reasons for that is that since it's almost all the way off, it's considered halachically to have already come off in that perspective. And since the issue here is we're not using a nail clipper, so therefore it's only a rabbinical issur, it's only a rabbinical prohibition, and therefore the rabbi is permitted in this situation for us to finish removing that hangnail. Now, what happens, unfortunately, if you have little kids and someone has, you know, over in the shul, the candy man hands him a piece of gum, and unfortunately, after chewing it, ends up stuck in his head. Well, there's a problem. Now, how do we get the gum out of the hair? Well, what you can do is use a little bit of oil, or you can use a piece of ice and put it on the gum until it gets hard, and then at that point you're able to then slip the gum off of the hair, you know, that's stuck there. But you can't use peanut butter. The reason why you can't use peanut butter is a problem of what's called memrach, which we'll get to, God willing, in time, which is the concept of spreading and smearing, and this is a problem to do as well. Again, not necessarily in connection with smearing peanut butter on your piece of bread, which is all right, but in terms of taking it and using it as a means for removing gum from your hair, this is an issue. So that's in terms of the do's that we can do, in terms of shearing, in terms of this melacha. What can't we do? Well, obviously we can't cut hair with a scissor, not you, not your animals, for that matter. You can't tweeze out eyebrow hairs. So it's not just about cutting, even plucking and pulling is a problem. Pulling out a gray hair is certainly not allowed. If you ever wake up in the morning and have one of those clear white hairs that sticks out from the middle of your forehead, I'm sure all of you know what I'm talking about. You can't pull them out, unfortunately, on Shabbat. God willing, they won't happen often to you. Pluck a feather out of a chicken. I know all of us are just dying to be doing this, but no, on Shabbat you cannot be pulling feathers out of chickens. It's also considered to be a fairly cruel thing to do. This does hurt them. So in general, if you need to make a quill, you should kill your chicken before removing its feathers. Cutting or filing one's nails. This is an issue, as we said before. Cutting hair with one's teeth. This is also not allowed, even though this would again fall under the rabbinical issur, meaning because it's not the normal way of removing hair. Nevertheless, a person is not allowed to do so. Cutting off hanging pieces of skin or warts, you've got that pimple that's just sticking out there and you're dying to get rid of it. You can't just tear it off your face in order to make yourself look better. This falls under the malacha of hagozes, of shearing, and is not allowed. Now, the next malacha that we're talking about is called hamlabin, which is whitening or scouring. There's a bit of disagreement as to exactly which of the two, so therefore it falls into both. So when we say whitening, we're talking about the bleaching process, meaning the process of taking materials and so forth and whitening them, and scouring is the process of cleaning them up. So here's how it works in terms of the processing of the sheep's wool. Now, if you recall from before, we talked about the taking the shearing off the wool off the side of a sheep. Well, what that gives you is this big mat of basically greasy, grimy wool, not the white fluffy stuff that we all love and call sweaters. But in other words, what you have is this big mat. So now, what do you do with this? How do you make this into something, or begin the process of making it into something that you can go ahead and fix up to use for making the garments? Well, what you need to do is you need to wash it. You need to go ahead and soak it to get rid of the lanolin, which is the oils that are on there, as well as all of the debris that gets stuck into the hair. So you go ahead and you go through a process of putting it in water and soaking it and scrubbing it and squeezing it and wringing it and the various things in order to be able to remove all the debris. So all of that falls under this malacha of malabin, of whitening or scouring. Now, also beyond that, as part of the process of getting it ready for the purpose of dyeing, there are various different conditioners that are used in order to make the material more receptive to the dyes and also to whiten them in the process as well. In fact, in modern Hebrew, when you want to say, you know, you're going to bleach something, you're talking about being malabin, you talk about bleaching it in that same language. So, what does this category then entail? It is the cleansing in any manner of absorbent materials with absorbed dirt or the bleaching of such materials. So, all that falls then under this category. So, let's start out with the do's. Well, you can wash dishes, cups, etc. See, under Malabin, you end up with the fact that you really cannot do any kind of laundry, and cleaning in general becomes a problem. But when you're dealing with materials that are not absorbent, for example, like dishes and cups and things like that, there's no problem to go ahead and wash them. And the reason for that is that the dishes and the cups and everything, again, they're these hard materials. They don't have a ingrained, absorbed dirt material, and therefore they are not in any way like the concept of whitening or scouring that was done in for the purpose of the creation of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle. Therefore, it's all right. You can use paper napkins to clean up spills. Now, the reason why I bring this under the do's is like this. When you have a spill, especially a clear liquid spill, it could very well be that if you take a garment that you're particular about, in other words, some sort of material that you actually care about, that the actual process of sopping up and then perhaps later on even wringing out, which is certainly asur, but even the process of going ahead and beginning the soaking, meaning putting this material into the clear liquids, may actually improve the material itself. And that becomes an issue. That's asur, that's not allowed. That would come under this concept of whitening or scouring, and therefore would be asur. So by using paper napkins, you avoid all of those issues, and everything becomes basically all right. Now, it is certainly possible for a person to use shmatas, to use rags that are real rags, that doesn't care about at all, to go ahead and sop up these spills as well. But it's always good to know that if you want to be on all sides safe when you're sopping up spills, go ahead and use paper napkins, etc. Now, of course, when you're going to be sopping up anything for that matter, you've got to be cognizant of the fact that as you soak up, you get a material that becomes more and more saturated. Well, if a material becomes so saturated that just touching it will cause the squeezing out of liquids, and we've already talked about this in a previous class, why a person can't squeeze out liquids, and that comes under the concept of schita, which is a total of dash. Therefore, here also, this would be an issue. So you've got to be careful, again, to make sure you've got ample material in terms of the ratio to the spill that you're soaking up, and be careful not to get to a point where now you can't even move this material because it's so saturated. Now, you can dry dishes with a cloth. If you, in other words, if you've gone ahead and you've dried everything else, there's the whole process there of, for example, washing your hands or anything else. So it's called derech lichluch. It's a situation where what you're doing is the manner of actually ruining something, not fixing something. In other words, not going ahead. In other words, the actual usage of, for example, a dishcloth or a napkin or something to go ahead and soak up the water on your hands, the whole purpose in all of this is to remove the water from your hands and, in this case, dirty the towel that's being used. So in this particular situation, it becomes permissible. Now, if a person happens to be going out and it's a really rainy day and he gets himself soaked, there's a bit of a problem when he comes to his house. Well, what does he do with all his soaking wet clothing? The problem here is like this, is that if you go ahead and you were to hang up your clothes, so you would run into a situation where it would appear that the process of hanging up the clothing, which is something that is done immediately after washing clothing, in other words, it would appear, reasonably be appear, that you are actually doing the malacha of washing for anybody that might happen to walk by. So therefore, because of marat ayin, because of the fact that it would appear to be something which would look like you're infringing upon the halakha, you're not allowed to do this. You're not even allowed to do that in a private place. We have an obligation as Jews to not only do the right thing, but to constantly do whatever is necessary to not be in a position where it appears like we're doing the wrong thing. Remember, we're all representatives on this earth of Jews and our mission, which is the service of God and His Torah and His mitzvot. And therefore, if we were to do something which could be reasonably construed from the outside as something which is asur, something which is forbidden, therefore somebody might reasonably think that here is a Jew who is violating God's word and will, and therefore, worse than that, he may turn around and say, oh, look, it seems that even this Jew doesn't look and doesn't hold important the Torah. And therefore, we have to be cognizant that we are representatives, regardless of whether or not we're religious or not religious or anything else. We are representative of the Jewish people by the very fact that we are Jews. You got to be careful about that. So in this regard, a person has a problem. Hanging up garments is not allowed on Shabbat then. So the only thing you can do is take these wet garments off your body, throw them into a corner. You could throw them over a railing if it's, in other words, just as a clump. In other words, not laying it out or anything else, because clearly that doesn't look like you're hanging up anything to dry. In other words, after cleaning. So this would be all right. So as a result of all this then, a garment which you would not wash, for example, like a suit jacket or something like that. So since this is something that nobody would think that you stuck in your washing machine or that you were going ahead and washing or anything else like that, therefore it would be permissible to go ahead and hang them up. So it's perfectly okay to hang up your suit jacket whenever you wish, and there's no issue with that. The same thing would go, of course, then for a raincoat. A raincoat is something which we don't wash, at least not, in other words, not in the same manner of washing. And therefore it's not an issue. So if you have a raincoat and you want to go ahead and put it someplace on a rack or something to dry, that's perfectly all right on Shabbat. Now, if you happen to have a dress that's clinging and so forth, going ahead and spraying a little bit of static guard on it is fine. It doesn't actually cause the garment to soak and get wet or anything else like that. It just sort of sprays on and lets everything release, and that's all right on Shabbat as well. And if you have to walk around in the rain, this is not a problem. Even though it's true that it's going to soak your clothing, you're certainly not doing this in order to wash your clothing, and therefore this is all right. The Chachamim, meaning the rabbis, never felt it necessary in a case like this to make a gzerah, to make an additional barrier against walking around in the rain as a barrier to washing clothing. So what can't you do? Well, what you can't do is wash, soak, or scrub dirty material. So when we talk about milabim, we're talking about scouring and whitening. So obviously you can't do anything that's going to whiten the material, meaning, in other words, put bleach on, etc., things like that, or even wash with take liquid, clear liquids and apply them to materials and things like that. But in addition, as we said, scouring, meaning this process of washing, is in fact, according to most poskim, the actual thing, the actual malach of malabin is. So therefore, we can't wash, soak, or scrub. So that means to say you scrub hard materials, in other words, even when dry. So you can't take, for example, your tie and you've got some little bit of dirt on it or something and go ahead and rub it together in order so that that should go ahead and sort of blot out and no longer be noticeable. That would be a sore, even dry. And that's called shifshuf. Now, if you happen to have a glob of something that happens to stick onto your tie or your something else along those lines, you would be allowed to go ahead and, for example, say, roll the material so that it would cause the glob to just go ahead and fall off or roll off as well. You wouldn't, though, be allowed to scratch off a hard glob that happens to be sitting on your material because of the fact that that would come under the malacha of tochen, of grinding. So in these situations, like I said, that anything that has to do with scrubbing is going to be an issue. So again, rubbing hard materials together is going to be a problem. So soaking, shriya, this is the second. So we're talking about wash, soak, and scrub. So again, soaking is the other issue. And that is that, again, you can't even soak something. So that you can't take, for example, the dirty rags that you have and throw them into a bin that's filled with soap and water to let it soak. Now, this wouldn't apply, as we said before, for example, of going ahead and dropping into a soapy basin a person's forks and spoons and plates and things like that so they should be washed after Shabbat. That wouldn't be a problem. But if it's an absorbent material, something that has dirt that gets ingrained into it, this would be asur, this would not be allowed. And shechita, which is wringing out, this is another form of the process of washing, and therefore wringing out from, for example, taking a towel and wringing it out, and this way the clear liquid should come out and take out with it the dirt, and that sort of thing would be asur, would not be allowed. Now, we saw that shechita, it was also brought down in more particularly under dash, as a tolda there, as a secondary category there, meaning that the idea of squeezing out in relationship to the idea of removing juices from fruits and things like that. But if you're dealing, though, with something that has embedded within it clear liquids, so the squeezing out of clear liquids then would also fall under this category as well. Putting water on a stain on clothes or carpet, so that's certainly going to fall under this malacha. Polishing silver, even though we talked about before the idea of hard materials being all right, when it comes to polishing silver, we are talking about what? About whitening, and therefore it's not allowed. In other words, but not necessarily the scouring, but because of the fact that it's just making it, again, whiter. Have a water balloon fight is brought down in one sefer that I saw, definitely not allowed. Again, you're soaking clothing. Everybody's going to get all wet and soaked and all this sort of thing on purpose. And that's an issue. Put a wet garment near a radiator to dry off is not only a sore because you're going to be spreading it out and therefore you're going to be hanging up this garment, but also you may be violating the halakha of bishul, of cooking, by causing these liquids to go ahead and boil off, to cook off the materials. So again, as we said before, hanging up any materials to dry that are typically washed, may not dry clean, that is something which is not allowed. Now, the next malacha is the case, is the language of the Mishnah, v'hamnapso, meaning that afterwards they would take the materials, the wool materials, and the wool materials that now have been washed and processed and so forth to remove all the dirts and the oils and everything else. Now what happens is you want to go ahead and you want to comb out that material. Hackling is what's the process when it talks about flax. When you go ahead and flax sort of grows, this kind of looks like these big tall grasses and like a bamboo, but again not that large or hard. And when you break open flax, you have sort of this long white fibrous material inside that's kind of sticky. So you would go ahead and you do what's called hackling, which is the same case here, which is combing, which is to separate out the individual fibers. So what is not allowed here is the separating of a group of fibers into distinct fibers. So this is something which is not allowed. This is the definition of that malacha. So what can you do? Well, you can run your fingers through your hair. In this case, you're not actually separating the individual fibers when you're going ahead and kind of patting your hair down or all that sort of thing. Unless, of course, you happen to have, extremely matty hair or something like that. But generally speaking, when a person's just sort of giving himself a bit of a tune-up on Shabbat morning so he doesn't look like everything is flying all over the place, that's not going to be an issue. But again, as we saw before, that again in the previous halacha, we saw the discussion again of combing being an issue, and specifically that was combing in the case of the falling under Hamlabin. In other words, that the whole process, under shearing, under gozes, because the whole process itself, again, could cause hairs to come out and things like that. But the idea of shearing that we had before, though, only applies to live animals, or even for that matter, dead animal skins, and things like that, but it wouldn't apply to something synthetic. So here the concept of combing is once you already have something that's already separated from its source, meaning it's no longer connected to the animal, or it's synthetic altogether. So this combing sort of kind of fills in the gaps where a gozes wouldn't have left it. So therefore what a person can't do is can't go ahead and comb, for example, a shetel, a wig, in order so that the hair should again all be separated and be nice and neat and wonderful. Again, if a person would go ahead and just sort of pat it into place, things along those lines, that would be fine. But again, to actually go ahead and do like a fine combing of the shetel, this would be asur under this concept of, in other words, of combing. Okay, going on to the next malacha, dyeing. So now once you've gone ahead and you've prepared the separated fibers, so in other words, in the process of making garments, so these fibers now, you want to color them. You want them to look nice. You want them to have the various different colors, the reds and the blues and so forth and so on that were used in the Beit HaMikdash. So in the Mishkan and its creation. So in this case, what can you do? The coloring and even darkening of any material then falls under this category and is not allowed on Shabbat. So let's talk about what you can do. Well, what you can do is you can use 3D red-blue glasses to go ahead and look around. The fact that you're going to put these glasses on and look around and see things in different colors is not called dyeing. You haven't actually changed the material. All you've done is you've seen it through a filter. So even taking like a color gel, you know, piece of plastic and placing it on top of something else, and now looking at it and seeing it as being red or blue or whatever else, this is not an issue. Again, you haven't changed the material. You haven't affected the material itself. You're just, again, seeing the filtering of light that is bouncing off of that material. And therefore, that's all right. You are allowed to wear eyeglasses that turn dark in the sun. You might have thought that this is an issue of dying, but this is not the case. It's, again, not a permanent situation. It does not apply here. And again, so walking outside and going ahead and the fact that your glasses now will turn dark and when you go back in, turn light again, that's going to be all right. You can mix foods, if not for the exclusive purpose of coloring the food, because we have a principle called Ein Soveya Be'Ochlin, that there's no concept of coloring by foods, but that means to say when you're not coloring the food, you know, putting color in the food on purpose, for the sole purpose of coloring. So if you went ahead and you had some whipped cream and you wanted to go ahead and mix into it some turmeric or something or some beet powder in order so that it should look now pink, that would definitely be a sore. In other words, if you're just doing it for the sake of coloring, that still ends up being part of the sore. But if, again, just mixing food, if you have mashed potatoes and you want to go ahead and squeeze a little bit of ketchup in there and mix it around and eat it, that's fine. That's not going to be an issue. Some people are even particular that, for example, if they're going to have grape juice and they want to add water, that they put the grape juice first and then add the water instead of the other way around. But there are certainly what to hold by also the other way around. So, what can't you do? Well, you can't use crayons, paints, and markers and things like that. Again, that's certainly a case of dyeing. You can't use pH test strips. In other words, things that can change color because of the various materials that's going to check. That means to say, for example, if a person also would be diabetic or something like that, and he's using test strips, which, by the way, are not a very good way at all of being able to determine if you really have a problem. By the time you have sugar coming out of the urine, whereas what you would use to test, it's already very high, meaning you're over the 180s and certainly need serious help. So this is not the case. But nevertheless, if that is the way a person is maintaining himself and his health using these strips, he certainly should seek out the assistance of a Rav to really talk one-on-one on exactly what can be done, etc. Because in general, just to use some test strip that will change colors based on, again, heat and chemicals and things like that is not going to be allowed. That's a case of dying. So therefore, a person wouldn't be allowed to go ahead and use these various mood sensitive materials that change colors and things like that based on your moods and going ahead and on purpose again causing these things to happen. This is an issue. Putting on lipstick, rouge, or eyeshadow, this is something which is not allowed. The idea here is that you're putting this on and it's intended to stay there for a while. And this is something which is a sur. So same thing with rouge and eyeshadow and things like that. These are, again, going ahead and coloring up your skin is going to be an issue. That would also include, by the way, if a person was to grab their cheeks and squeeze them until they turn red, and was that they should stick that way for a long time or something like that. That also falls in this isur. I mean, just going ahead and, say, squeezing your hand for a moment and so it turns a little bit red and letting go and it turns right back white, that's not going to be an issue. But again, a person women can make before Shabbat and put on makeup and things like that and what have you. But unfortunately, on Shabbat, this is an issue. And even if a person was going to be using powdered lipsticks and various things like that, all of these things still fall under the sur of dying, as their intention is to stay there for a long period of time and therefore can't be done. Sorry. What you can't do now, and I'm sorry to say this, especially if you live here in South Florida like myself, is that you can't go out and take a suntan. Going out specifically for the purpose of laying out in the sun to receive a suntan is a sur. Now, if you happen to be like me, that if you walk through the sun in about 3 minutes, you turn dark, that's not an issue. But if you go there on purpose into the sun for that purpose, you have certainly run into a problem with the law, the Torah law, and you can't do this. So again, you can't lay out in the sun for a suntan. A person should also avoid, and I know this is going to be a big downer for a lot of you, you cannot use those blue toilet tabs in your toilets. Now, you can use the white ones, the clear ones. In fact, I almost insist that you do. It helps to keep things clean. But again, using the blue ones is an issue. Now, if you're stuck someplace and the toilets there have the blue already in them, you are allowed to go ahead and take care of your needs and flush. But when possible, and you don't have to worry about yellow and blue makes green or any of these sort of things, but you do have to worry, though, that, again, from the onset, to avoid getting into this situation. So, again, so a person should avoid using the blue ones or anything else like that. When he's thinking about the choices for his home, use the clear liquid, the clear ones. Okay, the last malacha that we'll be talking about for this evening is spinning, toveh. So this is the twisting of fibers into a thread. So this is something which is not allowed. Again, this part, once you have these fibers that have already been separated out and dyed, now you've got to take them and you sit down and you spin them. You spin them into threads, and those nice long twisted fibers that come together and then become yarn and so forth and so on in order to make you your sweaters and everything else. So this is not allowed. So don't make your own yarn on Shabbat. And all of us were just dying to do this one as well. But there are still some practical applications. Retwist unraveled threads together. For example, like if your tzitzit happened to start fraying at the end or something like that, you wouldn't be allowed to like twist them and so forth to kind of get them to stick together and stay that way. The other thing that you might practically come across that also is not allowed is making wicks from cotton, for example, preparing a wick for Shabbat or something like that. A good friend of mine does this, and this is a really nice thing to mention, that on Sukkot, we frequently get our lulavim wrapped in this material, which is actually called jute. It's a sort of relative of linen. So this material goes and wraps and protects the etrog, and it had this really nice purpose. In other words, it's used for protecting a mitzvah. It seems an awful shame just to take that and throw it away once the holiday of Sukkot is over. So one nice thing to do is to save these save this material, and come Hanukkah time, to go ahead and take them out, and then twist them and make them into wicks. And they work as excellent wicks, to go ahead and light for the sake of Hanukkah. For that matter, for Shabbat candles and things like that. If you're using oil and things along those lines. And that's an excellent way to be able to fulfill the mitzvah by piggybacking on another mitzvah, meaning keeping everything in the realm of Kedusha. So, God willing, we will, each and every one of us, be cognizant of the 30 Melachot, keep it on the tips of our minds, tips of our tongues and talking, and each and every one of us reminding each other, and together keeping Shabbat all that much more intensely and seriously and carefully, as we know that keeping one Shabbat, meaning that the entire Jewish people kept even one Shabbat together, the Yerushalmi says to us, that if we kept it all kehalacha, Mashiach would be here, and God willing it should be, Mashiach to be Amen.